This is the Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 234 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Michael Chatfield all about how to write lit RPG. First, to last week's comments. So, Matt Goodall said, Fictionary's first certified coach. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your competition loudly enough. It's also a fact, though. Like, I was the first. Kerry Hardisky said, absolutely loved this episode. This is in reference to Kate Rundy, and was near giddy hearing how audio has taken off because I've had a dream for years about adapting my books into a full-on audio drama. Think old-fashioned radio show with music and sound and a full cast. That would be so fun, especially for fantasy and sci-fi. And then Podium said, amazing conversations and people. Aw, thanks guys. So as this episode airs, Fictionary are running their Story Garden Summit. Now, this episode airs on the 20th of March and the summit does start on the 19th, but you should still be able to sign up, no problems. It's a pay what you can conference, and the summit is for writers who believe in quality, not just quantity. In collaboration with our event partners, we've curated a program to help you. Sorry, we being them, I'm reading their information. So they will help you find ideas and develop outlines for beautiful stories, edit and copy edit your writing more effectively, prepare to publish and promote your books with a sound strategy, and promote and sell your books to build an engaged audience. So if you think that sounds interesting, then it is 4 information-packed days starting on Tuesday the 19th of March and running for 4 days afterwards. They have some incredible people speaking and incredible companies. Plotter, obviously Fictionary and Pro Writing Aid, Draft to Digital, ReadZ, Written Word Media, and a whole host of other guests. It actually sounds bloody fantastic. So I hope that if that interests you, you will go and click the link. It's not an affiliate link, it is just a link in the show notes. So in personal news and updates then, I am back from Seville and London Book Fair. It was a wild week. It has been very, very long. I'm absolutely exhausted. I think you can probably hear it in my voice. I'm so tired that the lovely woman from Amazon PR team realised that when I was at the Amazon dinner on Wednesday that I had crashed and burnt, and she sort of leant into my ear and was like, I think your introvert just died, didn't it? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, I'll get you a cab. And oh my goodness me, I was so grateful because they got me a cab. I was able to sprint across King's Cross station. Literally, I ran as fast as I could. And I managed to get on one of the last fast trains. So I got home an hour and a half early, which was fantastic because I then proceeded to crash and burn and literally sleep like the dead that night. And then the following 2 days, I basically said no words and didn't have any music or anything because I'd just been so overstimulated, so overpeopled. I couldn't even string a sentence together coherently the following morning. I was that tired and that overpeopled. And it's when things like that happen that it reminds me I'm actually not an extrovert. Yes, I'm very good at doing people, but it's extremely energetically expensive for me. You know, I love being on stage. I really do love being on stage. And that gives me energy, but there's never the stage in isolation. Like, there's always then people. And it's the people that kill me. Don't get me wrong, I love it. I absolutely love meeting people. I had a few people come up to me and it was so wonderful. And like, we did selfies and oh my goodness me, like, obviously for significance, that's a huge energy penny boost. So it's an odd feeling to have gotten so many energy pennies from meeting wonderful people, but also then being drained by all the talking. And in fact, more than that, at London Book Fair, I have a few sensory issues, and London Book Fair is just the single brightest building, and it is so horrifically noisy that the sound like echoes, and it's God, and I forgot to wear my loops, and so I was hugely overstimulated. So yeah, basically that's why I then spent 2 days in the quiet. But oh my goodness me, I loved it. I loved meeting everybody. Seville was lovely as usual. Had a lovely dinner with a friend. And yeah, so I don't think I can say lovely any more times. I really enjoyed the last week. I also had a day for my birthday in London with Chloe, and she brought all of the books that I picked up. So I've got a lovely big book haul to go through. But currently, and I should have said this at the top of the episode, if the sound is a bit weird, it's because I'm not in my office. We are in the throes of redecorating my office. I'm hoping that the painting will be done today and we'll start piecing it back together tomorrow. Might have a cheeky little trip to IKEA as well, get a few little bits and bobs. But it has meant that I couldn't use my office this morning. So if the sound is not great, I apologise. It's because I'm in my living room. Okay, I think we're going to move on. Rebel of the week this week is Madeline. Madeline says, my first love. It had to be a girl. She didn't know she was my first love. I could write fan fiction about us and our future. I had endless amounts of dreams about her. You want to talk about steamy. I wanted to kiss her, touch her. I just wanted her. Well, a few months in, I told her I was in love with her and asked her to go out with me. Oh boy, how that was silly. My whole family was Catholic, so I was going against all of their wishes. She told me to give her a few days. She came out to me saying she was pansexual, but wanted to try to date me. So every week I had her over. My parents never guessed that we were together. Sometimes I'd even sneak out of the house just to see her. Our kiss happened so oddly. I placed a body pillow between her and I and got on top of her and kissed her. Then I removed the pillow and kissed her neck. By God, the rush. She grabbed my hands. I held her down, kissing her more. And what happens next is so funny. My mum, oh my God, walks into my room and sees her in my bed holding me. She screams at my girlfriend, get the hell out of here. That night I came out as a lesbian and that she was my girlfriend and that I loved her and that nothing would change that. So I would sneak out, meet her in this abandoned house, and we would make out for hours. It even got to the point where we both started to strip one another. I started wearing a dog tag she had made me for saying I belonged to her and she only ever wanted me. It had her name on it and I wore it every day. My mum noticed and ripped it off me, and I said I was gross and that she would beat me. It got so bad I ran away. I later found out my girlfriend was in hospital because she had fell down and tried to die. Oh my God. Her family didn't know why until I told them what had happened with me and my family. They hated me and wanted nothing to do with me. They blamed me for it and moved. My world felt like it crashed to pieces. The photos we had of us kissing, I brought a locket and held them dear until I was 19. Silly, right? But I still love her to this day and I hope she is having a better life. Oh, wow. What a beautiful love story. I kind of wish that one day you'd find each other again, you know? That would be amazing. But what a beautiful story, and thank you so much for telling me, and also for, you know, sharing the horrors in your story as well. I'm really sorry that you were treated that way. If you would like to be a Rebel of the Week, please do send in your story. We are always in need of stories. It can be any kind of rebellion, something big, something small, or something in between. You can email your Rebel story to Becca over on rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com. Welcome to Melissa, and a huge thank you to all of my existing patrons. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all of the episodes, as well as bonus content from as little as $2 a month, you can by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. And don't forget, we have the Rebel Slack group. We have the masterclasses, one of which I'm teaching next week, which is on how to be a number one bestseller on Amazon. The next class is going to be on crafting a unique writing voice, and we also have movie nights and all kinds of crazy bonuses like that, including Poison and Prose. This episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free, fast and easy self-publishing platform. KWL was built by authors for authors, and their team of dedicated book lovers is always working hard to help you reach new readers around the world. Kobo's author-first approach is one of the reasons they developed a promotions tool. This is an easy and affordable way for you to market your book directly to Kobo readers. They offer lots of promotions that don't require you to drop your price because they know when you're publishing wide, it can be a pain to coordinate pricing across multiple retailers. Any promotions listed as a percent off, e.g. 40% VIP sale, mean you don't have to change your price as the discount will be provided by a promo code at the checkout. If that sounds good to you, keep an eye out for percent off promotions and buy more, save more sales, where you can submit your titles and leave the rest to Kobo. And if you're taking part in a promotion, be sure to tell your readers about it. The promotions tool is updated on a weekly basis, so make sure you're taking a regular look to see what's on offer, and if there's an opportunity that matches your books and marketing plans, then take it. If you're a KWL author and don't yet have access to the promotions tool, email the team at writinglife@kobo.com and they'll enable it for you. If you want to learn more about KWL, check out the Kobo Writing Life podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, and find them on social. You can create your free account today at kobo.com/writinglife. That's enough from me this week. Let's get on with the episode.
Hello, and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Michael Chatfield. Michael is a wacky Canadian Brit, we're not really sure which, who spreads his special blend of insanity-tempered realities through book format. Of course, he writes sci-fi, fantasy, and lit RPG. Hello and welcome.
Hey, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on the show. So just explain the Canadian Brit bit before we dive into conversation about lit RPG.
Okay, yeah. It probably explains for everyone listening when my accent changes.
You do have a wild accent.
I have a drinking game with one of our mates, actually. And it's like every time that I change accents, he just goes, from across the bar and says, "You've got to take a drink now." I'm like, thank you. So I was originally born in the UK, lived there, and then started moving to the Canada. So it was kind of weird of like I would live in the UK for a couple of years and I'd live in Canada for a couple of years and back and forth. And then that continued on until I had a big change in my life around 11. And I moved to Canada, stayed in Canada, joined the Canadian Army even. And I've been here pretty much ever since. But it also means as a kid, I got used to understanding accents around me because I would have a British accent in Canada and I'd have a Canadian accent in the UK, and it was absolute chaos. So that's why I have the two accents. Usually the UK one is the one I use the most because especially for talking and all that, it's actually easier for me to use. But if I'm around like people where I have to be as clear as possible, then I use Canadian accent because I think it's pretty neutral. So yeah, that's a long-winded, short explanation of all of that. Yeah.
Amazing. Where feels like home?
Well, seeing as I'm living in Canada right now, I'd have to say Canada. But I'm very, very lucky to be able to jump around quite a bit. So my cop-out answer is also wherever my friends are and there's a cold pint to be had.
Oh, I love that. Okay, well, tell everyone a little bit about you and your journey. Like, how did you get to where you are in your writing business today?
So I started off this whole escapade kind of in an interesting way. I guess as we are on the Rebel podcast, I should talk about the rebellion at the beginning. So I started off right away as an indie author coming into the sphere. I was writing sci-fi. I thought, this is a cool book. I should get this done and I should actually, you know, publish it, because I'd written a number of like things, but nothing was ever publishable. I would hesitate to call the first book that I put out very publishable, but you know, people were like, this is good. And I'm like, is it? I still am in that stage though, you know, this far on. But they were like, okay, we'll read the first book and go on the second book. And that started everything. But the rebel part of that was I started off indie, writing to KDP. It was interesting because a lot of people say, oh, did you pick traditional or indie author? And it was only a question like later on that I'd heard, but I never had that question in the beginning because to me, with Amazon, it allowed this opening into the market. It allowed it just to kind of you can express your stories however you want to, and there's not nearly as many moderators upon it. And I just wanted to share a story. So that was, I think, near enough 10 years ago now. And yeah, we've been just writing books ever since. It led to me being able to tell the army, hey, I really, this is a terrible story. The reason I left the army is because I had to do parades. I hate parades. It's a whole bunch of like marching around and doing formations and all this kind of stuff. And a big parade was coming up. And I, in Canada, you can give you 2 weeks' notice and get out, which is much more different than a lot of other militaries. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a year in
So,
the UK.
yeah, no. Well, it by paperwork, because it's sometimes not the most efficient machine. It was about. So I gave my notice, and then I didn't have to go to parade for this thing, and then I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. Well, I guess I've got to work a little bit harder now. And yeah, turn to writing and turn into the publishing industry. And we've been doing it for 10 years. Started in science fiction, went into lit RPG and fantasy, bounced back and forth between the two genres, three genres, I guess now, which is always hard because lit RPG is like an add-on misnomer to usually the other genres, even though it's now become its own like standalone genre. So it's always interesting how that genre tree works. But yeah, that's, I guess, the chaos of it all. Then
No,
getting here.
I love it. I don't think I knew. I can't remember because obviously we met in Seville last year. I can't remember if you told me that you're in the army, but it makes a lot of sense to me. I was not in the army. I nearly joined the army though. I was going to go through to Sandhurst, but they wanted me to commit 4 years at university and then 4 years afterwards. And I was like, 8 years of my life. I just no. So I didn't join in the end, but I was like an army cadet for a really long time. So I was a fainter as well on parade, I won't lie. Like I used to faint
Oh,
a
well,
lot.
it's like one of the interesting tricks that like people don't tell you and you learn is like when you're standing still for a really long period of time, all your blood pools in your feet. And so you have to look like you're not moving in this
Yeah. And then
statuette
just
like
like
figure.
flex your butt cheeks or something to try and stop yourself passing out.
Like underneath, you just like you're squeezing your feet, squeezing your
Yeah.
calves, and squeezing your legs, and just like if someone sees you from behind, they're just like, "Is it boot camp? It's booty boot camp going on here or something?" And you're just like, "I'm trying to not faint. I'm so exhausted."
I remember once I was on parade and they were inspecting us, and my sergeant major came behind me and like leaned in because I had like a my hair is super curly and I had like one curl out of my bun and he leaned in to scold me and I just dropped on him. So
Oh,
I never got told off and I anyway, this is not a podcast about the army, but I did want to come back to what you were saying about lit RPG being an add-on. What do you mean? And can you define lit RPG? What is it? How is it different to fantasy? Like, tell me the stuff.
so it's okay. Lit RPG is an interesting one, and I know that there's different blends of explaining what it is. And I think basically that the highest level of it is when you have a book which has video game elements and actual numbers and stats related to characters or things within the story that show the progression of those characters or things throughout the story. So example would be in Lord of the Rings, how Gandalf the Grey becomes Gandalf the White. It's okay, you've got a clear distinction between the two. Now, what you would have is if it was more Dungeons and Dragons. So, Gandalf the Grey has, I'm just going to use basic, but like he has like 10 intelligence, and then Gandalf the White has 20 intelligence. So, you can see that the intelligence has changed, and that means that he's more powerful in his role. And so that's like a quick, clear delineation between the two. Now, the interesting part is a lot of times it's lit RPG and then fantasy, or lit RPG and sci-fi, or flipped around the other way. The reason is because there's that kind of interface almost of lit RPG placed upon science fiction or placed upon fantasy. So with science fiction, you'd have, okay, this battleship has 100 armor, and this destroyer has 80 armor. Okay, so you can see those kinds of stats and information added onto it, but it's science fiction with lit RPG added onto it. Now, I think it's the thing that makes it truly lit RPG is actually having those stats blended into the story so that they are a core component of that story. It's having your magic system not just explained in words, but in numbers, which I find that can make it a lot easier to sometimes relate that information across to someone, because numbers is the only true universal language that we have as a human species, and it allows that quick correlation of information. So does that make it a little bit easier to understand questions?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I'm such a cliche, and the only like lit RPG that I know is Ready Player One. Sorry. It's
No,
probably like
you're all good.
sacrilege to say that. But yeah, I'm trying to think if I know. I probably do. Obviously, there was a Dungeons and Dragons movie recently, which I partly watched. But yes, that does make sense. And and certainly the progression element. And so I'm guessing there are like lots of obstacles or things that the characters have to do to like get to those other levels, but I'll ask you about that in a second. Okay, let's say we've got listeners who want to move into lit RPG. Where do they start? What you've already mentioned, like blending the magic and the numbers and the leveling up of the magic into the story and making it a core component. But what are kind of the major craft pillars of writing an lit RPG book that would set it apart from just from like an epic fantasy, for example? Or like, yeah, what are the craft pillars that you really focus on to make your book lit RPG?
So I think one of the core things that happens in the RPG is your coming into power gets rapidly condensed, because instead of having the teacher there who's going to say, okay, this is how you understand fire spells and stuff, in lit RPG you can have, oh, I've got the fire spell in my spell book, how do I use this? And it's usually a lot more self-discovery in that way, or the tutorial section essentially. So when you play a video game, you get that tutorial to figure out how to, run, crouch, jump, and all the rest of it. With that, you can actually just go, all right, we've condensed that in lit RPG rapidly. So it usually means that you can quickly go from we're learning our powers to we're using that in a story somehow. I would actually say, so kind of a little divergent to this, is a good place to actually find your tastes for lit RPG is to go to Royal Road, because it's a free website and they have a ton of different lit RPGs on there, a ton of different books. That might be a good way to find things. Right now, Isekai or game systems coming to real life and then impacting real life are kind of our core genres happening right now. So it's, you're going about your life every day, and in the morning you make pancakes, and then you flip your pancake and you serve it up, and then it goes plus one to cooking, and you go, what? And then you start seeing that as you do actions, then it has, a change upon yourself, and it's this, you do something and you get a reward, and that reward usually like starts climbing you up this ladder of progression. So I think it's blown the doors open in a lot of ways with the epic fantasy to lit RPG, because it'll have the elements of it, but then it'll go, well, actually, we're going to take epic fantasy, but then blend that with you're a teenager who's like fallen into a portal and now you're in this fantasy world. What's going to happen next?
So in terms of like narrative prose, what do the gaming elements look like? Like, is it an omniscient narrator? Is it like just at the beginning of the chapter? Like, how does that get put in without it disrupting the flow of the story, I think is what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, it's, you know what? It's actually, it's a hard thing because it is essentially kind of a narrative voice,
Okay.
which is separate from the character, right? Because it's reporting on what's going on.
Is it
So it's a
ever
hundred.
embodied? Like, is it ever like an AI organizing the game type thing? Or is it, yeah, sorry, I'm fascinated by this.
Well, it can come in many flavors, but usually there can be two components. So number one, the stat sheet is like drilled into stone, right? So that is 100% reliable. But there can be more information. So say you get, a piece of paper with all your stats on it. That's 100% solid, but there might be more information behind that. And as you go through the story, you learn more of the nitty-gritty, like the bits in between. Much as, with magic systems, you're like, okay, I can use spells. Okay, but why can I use spells? And then that's the kind of opening up that piece. Then you can also have godlike beings, AI, or other things that could be linked to the system. So they're the ones giving you rewards, and they can be in different flavors. So, like, I had it in one of my books where you get rewards for doing things. And there'd be comments by this snarky AI that's like, wow, you nearly died again. Congrats. Well, didn't work. So here's the thing. Like, I guess, win. But it's, those like snarky little bits.
You sound like my son. That's literally how he talks, like constantly. I'm like, huh? What? Well done, mummy. You got a reward. I'm like, I did? Son, what am I doing? Like, me not having a tantrum. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, that's so funny. I wonder what game he plays that, like, is giving this language.
But it's that thing of like, it's that kind of, I'll give you a reward, but there's like a snarkiness to it, which makes it a fun interaction now. But that kind of character may never actually be fully developed, right? That you may never know that character. So you can have that. But it is really, the system is kind of its own very reliable narrator. The character is trying to decipher usually that information on the sheet or the world around them. And then they're using, by tests and trials and numbers, they can actually like work out the world around them. So, as a guiding line through it all, it also creates a reward system of, as you complete things, instead of you just having to have, oh, my character's done this, and you can tell the reader that they've done this item. They can go, oh, I can see that they've done all of these things because I'm getting the visual representation and the character's getting rewarded for it.
Okay, so just like a random tangent, how do you format that? Like, literally, logistically, how do you, I'm taking it you can't use vellum or something like that.
So I don't personally have vellum, but I know some people do, and they've been able to do it. So what they do is they do like tables, and then they'll format it in the tables. It's quite tricky. But the other thing is, and this is a personal hack that I've done. I'll tell you the good way to do it and the dumb way that I did it. So the good way to do it is like use like oh, the greater than or less than signs. Or like equal signs, and then you can just go like a couple of equal signs and then put in information and then do that, So I had it on one series where I did 10 equal signs, which it could have just been one. I did 10 of them, and then I would like write in like name and then blah blah blah, here's your name, another 10 of them, here's a stat, here's another 10 equal signs, here's another stat, and all that kind of stuff all the way down. Please don't do that. It's terrifying. And it's also so many times that I was just like, one, two, three, four, five, six. I've lost count. One, two, three, four, five. I was like, so it was, don't do that. But it is, using italics, using what are the boxed off brackets?
Yeah, the square ones, square brackets.
Square
That'll do.
bracket things or like slashes and stuff, right? So those are
Okay, so
all.
it's not like you need somebody who can use Adobe Illustrator to format your, oh, you do need somebody who can use Adobe. No. Oh,
No,
okay.
no, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's easier to do that, especially because if like I did it on Emerillion series, we had boxes and it took us so much time to get those boxes okayed. And you can see it because Royal Road's been throughout this lit RPG journey of older series, they'll have blue boxes. But now it's just, couple of stars, a couple of, I would actually refrain from doing stars because then people think it's going to be a break. But like slashes or squared off brackets or the greater than symbol just makes it a little bit easier for you. And you can just copy and paste it instead of having to worry about, okay, this is going to be HTML. This is going to be a different format. And it absolutely goes squiggly, which we just released the German version of one of our books with the whole formatting in it. And yeah, that was fun. Like day one, everyone's like, I can't read this. And of course, they're saying it in German, so it sounds much more angry than that. And we're just like, oh, God, we're so sorry. Like, we'll go fix this for you. But is, it's the tricky part that you run into with that because you're going, that's be a bit of a mess. And it takes up a lot of page space, especially if you're doing printed books.
Okay, so I feel like you've sort of alluded to a mistake there, but what are some other mistakes that you think new writers make when approaching lit RPG?
I think it's a lot of experimentation still, right? I think that people saying I have to follow what everyone else is doing kind of can pigeonhole. The space is very open for all kinds of different things. I don't want to see, I think that making mistakes is sometimes the best way to learn,
Oh,
right?
yeah, I don't disagree. But, if you were going to help a newer author, or what mistakes did you make? Did you make any mistakes in over the years?
Yeah, don't submit a book when you're blind drunk. That's a bad idea. Yeah, that was went to Cancun, submitted a book, wrong file,
Oh,
wasn't it? Yeah, that
Cancun.
was don't do that. Pre-order can be your friend. I know it didn't used to be. I think this is one of the easiest hacks to have. It used to be you would publish on Amazon like 5 p.m. the night before. So do it on Monday at like, well, 5 p.m. Eastern time. So like 3 p.m. or so, submit it. And then the next day it'll come out on Amazon usually. And that was because the pre-order system didn't really work in your favor. Because if someone picked up the book the day afterwards, it didn't actually work towards your rankings. It just kind of sat flat. Now that system's kind of been fixed, it looks like at least. And so having a pre-order can really help you out. You have to have your book in 2 weeks ahead of it actually coming out, and you can get all of your other things sorted out beforehand. It gives you kind of a leeway time. Don't rush to release things. Take your time, because if you give yourself 20% more time, you'll probably have a 40% better output. And when you're first submitting your book, take your time to look through everything that you're doing at least twice, because there's a lot of stuff that's hidden in there. It's a very dense system. Like we've both dealt with it quite a few times now, and it's like, oh, it's this old hat of, well, I do this, and that's that. Take your time, I think, would be the biggest piece of advice I have, because while we are all authors and we love the story, dealing with the other parts that surround the story, the businessy parts, while it may not be your fun space, is the stuff that you'll have to do so that you can get back to your fun space and kind of get left alone in your cave.
The admin, the never-ending admin. Oh, that takes so much time and energy, and oh my goodness me. But I tell you what, it's worth it to get those couple of months of pure craft time. They're like crack to me. Okay, let's talk, let's round off the craft discussion with talking about the world building and the game mechanics. Like, how do you set up the rules? How do you create like restrictions? Because obviously we know the art of a good magic system is to have restrictions. So yeah, like what are the elements of world building that are important? How do you blend that with game mechanics? What is important to go in?
Yeah, like I think actually one of the things that lends itself to, well, the rules is because you have like levels, because you have, different abilities, and it gives you kind of a cap on stuff. And it says, you're level 10, fighting a level 10 person is going to be difficult, but it's not impossible. Fighting someone who's level 11 is going to be a whole heck of a lot harder. So figuring out what the difference is, like if you're fighting someone a level higher, how much of a skill difference, how much of a difficulty difference is there, is definitely one thing that kind of makes it a bit easier. The other thing is that, okay, personally, when I'm building my story, the first thing I have is usually a scene, and it's a scene of the characters doing something. And sometimes I don't even know who the characters are in that point. I'm just like, oh, that's kind of cool. That would be really awesome if we can figure that out. And then I go, okay, well, what kind of world would that happen in? And what kind of characters would thrive in that world? And what abilities are they showing in this scene that I can work towards? Which is actually very similar to what video games do. So, people may or may not know this. Certain video games, what they do is they create the trailer first, and that's a proof of concept. Yeah. So they'll so like so, the Assassin's Creed, they have some amazing trailers. I have a deep belief that they make the trailers first, and then what they do is they go, okay, now we're going to go and make that happen, right? And so what it is in you go, okay, now you have to create that ability to have that scene actually become a reality. So for me, that's how I kind of work, which also means, okay, so all the things we've seen in the scene, all the characters we've seen in the scene, how do we make this equation kind of work? And then you go, all right, well, I think this character is going to be able to do this, this character is going to do this and this and this. So then let's bring that back and go, how do they grow that from the base up to that point? And sometimes, because that scene's only in my head, sometimes it becomes real, and sometimes it never becomes real because it was just kind of the seed that created the whole thing. But go and have a look at least, if not at what 100% will look like, what 70% will look like for your characters. And then you can scale down from there. And you also know where you can scale up. Because that's the hardest thing is going, okay, if my character's level 10, how strong is that? If there's 20 levels in the world, they're stronger than probably 95% of the world. So who are they surrounding themselves with? What does it look like from the perspective of someone who's level one? Those kinds of things.
So how do lit RPG authors structure their like, do you write in series or are they all standalones? Or yeah, like how does that work? Are they interconnected standalones? Like, do you write in the same universe or do you blow up the universe? Therefore, you have to keep creating new. Like, what is the structure kind of for lit RPG?
Usually, I think so with our systems being so large, right? You've got like 20 levels, and usually to grind every single level is rather large. And then you have miniature goals on, along the way of like, I can learn crafting, so smithing or alchemy or something of the kind. It means it lends itself to long series and long books. I think this might be terrifying to some people, but a lot of the books in Lit RPG are 150,000 words or more. So yeah, like 200,000 per book is not abnormal, which can be daunting.
Now I know why I
So
don't read lit RPG.
yeah,
Oh
but
my
it's a
God.
lot of
How long are your books? Like, how?
Okay, so the Ten Realms as it stands, I think is something like 2 or 3 million words.
How many books in the series?
12.
Fuck me. So they're like 200,000 word books each.
I think so. Book six and book seven we had to split because I think book six was 500,000 and book seven was something 430,000.
Who's we? Is this, you're not co-writing?
No, but it was like me and my team because I was
Oh,
okay
okay.
with putting it out like that. And they were like, we literally can't print this. And I was like,
No, you wouldn't be able to print a book
oh.
that big. So how many books a year do you publish?
It's dependent. So right now I'm actually, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to do shorter books. So it allows people to have, okay, it's a quick read. And it also allows me to actually speed up my production time because if I aim for around the 125,000 mark and then I can go to 100,000 to 150,000, that means that I can get out a book every 2 months, and then just keep on rolling like that. Now, of course, life will change that, and I never say a date until I'm 100% on it. But yeah, like usually,
So you're writing like 70K a month.
yeah, probably about that.
Okay. That's really like yeah, I find that really interesting to know like what the production model is. So we were talking off air, and I was explaining that I am having to shift from an indie ebook first model to paperback predominant. And so my goal this year is to write six books, but only publish four, of which one was written last year, meaning that I'll actually have three in the bank before I start next year, because I need longer lead times, because it's only me. I don't have a, well, obviously I, you know, I've got a virtual assistant and I have editors and designers, but I don't have a team producing anything. So I need slightly longer lead times. But yeah, it's really interesting as well, because you strike me as a bit more consistent than I am. Whereas I like binge and purge. So basically I'm clearing the deck so that when I'm back from London Book Fair, I'm sitting my ass in this chair and I am not doing a fucking thing other than vomiting words for 4.5 months before I go to New Zealand. So yeah, like, and I'm hoping to be able to write like three books and hopefully a novella in there as well, but we'll see.
No
So,
pressure, no pressure.
oh no, but no, but that's the most fun bit. So that
Yeah,
doesn't feel like
100%.
pressure to me. It feels like the most fun bit of my whole job. So yeah, I don't even know where we've got completely off track. Tropes.
But so,
Oh,
well,
go on.
actually, so that leads me to another thing is Lin RPG is huge on serialization, web serialization. So Raw Road, which you mentioned before, is, you know, it's a chapter by chapter basis. So it's, you know, put out a chapter a week, put out 3 chapters a week, put out 5 chapters a week, whatever you want to do, which is interesting because that can actually slow down or at least mete out your book
It can, but
because.
also it makes it fast, a fast-paced read. And that was the thing that I wanted to ask you actually. One of the reasons I don't read long books is because they feel slow to me. But I have read a few Kindle Vella books that have kind that are serialized that have been smushed together, and they are so fast, and you cannot put them down because they are written episodically like a TV show with a hook at the end of every single chapter. And usually the chapters aren't long. So is that kind, because at 400,000, and that's a lot of fucking words, like that is a lot of words, like are they written fast or are they these long sweeping like epic fantasy? Like I've got a friend who reads epic fantasy and he absolutely loves these like fucking tomes, and I'm like, I'd rather like cut my kidney out than read that. Mostly because I read smut all the time, right? And smut books are really fast.
We
Like
won't
if it
tell them that, you
No,
know.
if there's not smut in it, I'm not interested.
It's fair though, right? But it is interesting, and you bring up such a valid point of it comes so Lit RPG has come so much from web serialization that those
Yeah.
mini hooks on the end of every single chapter is a normality. It
Wow,
also
okay.
because of, you know, your progressions and stuff. When you have your character increase in strength, or they've got, a new alchemical potion, or they've got a reward of a new crafting material. Those are small things, but it means that you have rewards in every chapter of, hey, you're with me on this chapter. Our character just got this. And I think the biggest thing that happens in little RPG is they've got this metal. And then it automatically starts going, what can they build off of this? And it's the dreamscaping off of that. And then next chapter may be them dealing with that, right? So lots of quick progressive things that kind of pull you along. Like I was just reading a mate of mine's book, and it's 200,000 words long. And
Is there any smut
it's
in
a
it?
no,
No.
no.
What if we could like level up and gain the smut?
Well, there is smut-filled lit RPG books.
Oh my God, I'm in. I will try it. Will you give me the recommendation?
Yes.
Amazing.
But it's the thing of like it's having it, okay, so like there's like dating sim video games. Is some of them are just like that. And so they're
Oh.
like, okay, so like you're going along and there's progression and all this kind of stuff in the world, but also at the same time there's smutness. So it's like a lot of it's harem related. But then there's also, like different ones where it's like, okay, like bits and pieces here and there. I'm not
The
personally in that area
euphemisms we're
as
using
much.
here.
Yeah.
Okay, just give me the recommendation off air, okay? It'll be fine.
Yeah, okay. But no,
Yeah.
it's like it's interesting because it has opened up so many doors in different areas. And you essentially having it's little RPG, but then it's romance, right? I know sci-fi and fantasy are talk so much, but there is, little RPG romance there too.
Okay, so I've heard you say a number of times that it really does like permeate through multiple genres. In which case, what are the tropes? Like, what are the common tropes that span all of them that make it lit RPG? Like, what are the things like, so for me in romance, like I'm a complete whore for enemies to lovers. Like, if it's enemies to lovers, I don't give a shit what genre it is, I'll read it. Like, I will fucking read it. So yeah, like what are those things? Or like only one bed. Oh, I love it so much. Or touch her and die. Ah, oh, I'm here for that. I just like every single book I ever write will probably have that in it. It never gets old. But yeah, what are the traits that really like make lit RPG lit RPG?
I think there's definitely like leveling up yourself, right? Put in work, get out a result, right? So, and it's usually a transformation thing, but of you transform yourself and you actually get a physical change, right? That's reflected upon yourself. There are many different tropes, but they actually go towards like specific genres of like isekai. So isekai is you're dropped into another world. Say from here, you're dropped into a fantasy world, dropped into a sci-fi world, or portal where isekai can be reincarnated. So like you died and you're reincarnated as a baby, but with all the knowledge of where you came from. But it can also be that maybe you're in a fantasy world and you reincarnated into Earth or something vice versa. But the key tropes are mostly your video game ones, which is you do actions, you increase your stats, you get gear, you increase your stats. There can be crafting, there cannot be crafting, those kinds of things. But it's usually a trade of I put in time and effort and I get stronger in some attribute is usually the core of it all.
A meritocracy.
Yes, and it's an absolute meritocracy because it's going, there is no one to get in your way, and it's a relation between you and your stat sheet. So sometimes this was an interesting one. You can have it on your stat sheet where your willpower is really low. And that is because the characters, say, got stuff they haven't dealt with. They've got depression. They've got stuff in their background which is draining their willpower. So to increase their willpower stat, they actually have to go deal with those issues. So it's those kinds of things where you're taking a human and you're putting numbers on them, but they're still a human. So That
Yeah,
can be fun.
it's really interesting that it kind of puts a formula to storytelling. And I don't mean formula as in like making it formulaic. That's not what I mean, but I mean formula almost in the way that we have story structure, you know, like in terms of its formula, in terms of character development or a character arc. You're literally leveling up the character through their character arc and making it, you know, yeah, well, literally that. Like, it's really interesting. I've never really thought about structuring story in that way and having it so identifiable. But I suspect we do do it, but we don't make it as what's the word? Like, identifiable, labeled. We don't label it, right? It, because that's not part of a game. We don't have it, or I don't have a gaming structure in my magical mansion grumpy gargoyle system.
But
Okay.
it's you could also use it as essentially look at it as a secondary plot device, right? Because as you're going through your story, your original plot is the character going through the story. But at the same time, they're bouncing between their actions and to meet some of the things that they need to along the way, they have to bounce down to the lit RPG facts. So it's, well, I need to get new weapons. I need to get new gear. I need to train up this. I need, like, it adds in very solid goals of along my trajectory to get from point A to point B, I need to hit these parts of the gamification because that will make my journey easier. It's a kind of thing of if you play a open world video game, it's you go do all the side quests first, and then you go back to the level one mission, and they're like, I'm the big bad, and you just flick them, and then they just disappear into the distance. But and you can have those options, or you can be like, I'm going to like the level 10 mission and I'm level one, and it's just like, oh, I'm gonna like please no, and then you just like go supersonic. So you can use it very much as a railroad to pull yourself along on your progression.
Let's talk about the like business model in terms of things like KU, ebooks versus print, and like quantity of releases per year for the average lit RPG author. Yeah, talk to me about that structure. What, you know, are you predominantly print? Are you predominantly ebook or KU, or how does that work for the average indie lit RPG author?
I would say the average author is probably doing about four books a year. Most of the time, actually, right now, it's people who have written a series on Raw Road or somewhere else, and then they're taking that serialization and then putting it onto Amazon. I think right now it's about a 50-50 split between book buys and KU, but it can swing as high as I've heard 80-20
KU versus
for KU.
okay. Because of gaming and things like Comic-Con, I should imagine that going to conventions is quite important for you. How do you approach that? Like, conventions scare the shit out of me. And I'm finding that the bigger my books are blowing, the more I'm getting asked for signings. Will you come here? You know, when are you doing a signing? How do I get signed books? I am fearless when it comes to a stage. I will stand on a stage of 2,000 people in front of 2,000 people and talk for an hour. No fucking problems. Sitting behind a table, talking one-on-one to a reader scares the absolute shit out of me. Really not here for that. However, I'm recognizing quite quickly that might be a thing I need to do in the next year or two. So I think talk to me about a couple of things. Like, how do you approach it? Sort of that thing. And then the tangibles. What do I need? What should I take? What kind of stuff do you need to print up or buy? Or what is a good convention setup look like?
So I would say the first thing to look into is where are your most active readers? So the people who were saying, "Are you coming to this? Are you going to this?" put out a poll or something and just ask, "Hey, I'm thinking about going to like these five conferences, let's say, but I can only go to one, possibly three. Let me know which one you would like to attend the most." And you get them to vote on it, and then they put in all their votes and stuff. And you can correlate that against, where are they geographically, like where do you sell the most, right? If it's the United States, if it's the UK, if it's Australia, use that kind of information. And you can use that to like kind of define down a couple of places to go. Because with these conventions, they do take a lot of time. And I don't just mean showing up. It is the logistical part of taking books there, setting up everything to get there, which when you're looking at it, so the things you'll probably need is when you get a convention space, it's usually just a table and a square area. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to get something to cover the table. Usually, you're going to want some kind of banner to have out front. You're going to want to have probably some kind of banner or something that you can have in the back. So then you have a backdrop drop, you have a front drop, and then you've got, your books where you have them. So you also have to look at guesstimating how many books do you need to take. And I would actually go with less more than more, because just in case. And the other thing to take into account is where are you getting those books printed? Where are you getting them delivered? Can they hold them for you if you're coming into country? So say for us, we're not US citizens and we would just go to the US to do this. You would have to, get the book shipped there, printed and shipped there, because you don't want to be taking them from wherever we are to over there, because that's just going to be so much more expensive. Then you're also going to have to look into taxation issues, and you're also going to have to look into payment information. So if you're selling in the US specifically, the US treat every state as if it's a different country because each of them have different taxation laws for everything. So you have to go, in Georgia, I'm doing this. In California, I'm doing this. In Kansas, I'm doing this. You can make that a little bit easier by using things such as Stripe or Shopify. And you go in with, when you're in a convention, it's all about the physical goods. You're going to give something to someone for memorabilia more than anything, because you want this sitting proudly on their shelf, proudly on their coffee table. It's signed, a conversation's been had there. You've transformed them into a super fan, and they know that you're a real person and know more about you, right? Fans want to support people. And until you're actually having that communication back and forth with them, sometimes you're not really a person. You're just a nebulous author, right? So set up your booth, get your sales sorted out, what make sure you know your tax implications, and you can actually even kind of work around that by taking a certain amount of books, because then you know what, if you sell all those books, what it's going to be worth, and if you're going to be inside or outside of certain tax brackets. The other thing is you control that environment to a large degree, right? You're putting up the banners, you've got the space, you can pick how you want to run it. What I would personally say is if you are running a booth, have at least one or two other people. Now, these can be other authors, or these can be people who are working with you. That allows you to kind of control your time a bit more, because as authors, we know that we can get drained and tired, and most of us statistically are introverts. So it's having set signing times, because one, that means when there's a set signing time, you could have 20 people lined up instead of five people like moseying through. So when you have a bigger line, that draws one, more interest from people. Two, it means that you don't have very long, drawn out conversations. So that's not to be mean, that's to progressively move through a bunch of people, because again, we're introverts, we only have a certain amount of time and energy we can give and take. So that's to go through 20 people instead of just five, and then you can see how it goes. Also, every convention is going to be different. So when you go the first time, give yourself a lot of cutouts so that you can disappear and go do other stuff. But then also to go, I can do more if I want to. But your other thing is once you've done your setup, once you've done your actual being there, then there's coming home, and it usually takes about a week to get back into schedule because you've either been in a different time zone, you've been on a different schedule, you've lost a whole bunch of energy,
You've
and
got
you
a
kind of
bunch of
need to build
email
it back.
admin. For that one as well. Yeah, the other thing I think I hadn't really thought about, but you prompted me when you said about tax, is that I'm probably going to have to look at a working visa rather than like a tourist visa, which is what I probably would have gone and done without thinking about it. So yeah, that is also something to think about.
One
I
loophole that though,
took
sorry.
notes. You're right.
Awesome. But one loophole is actually if you give away books. So, well, there's two loopholes. What really is you can have people pre-purchase books, and then you can ready those books or have them sorted and ready to go. So you say, hey, we've got, 20 books that people have bought. We've got 200 books. We've got 2,000 books that people have bought, and you've got them behind the counter. And then they go, and you go, oh, what's your name? And then they say, oh, this is my name. And you can give them a personalized package, and then off they go. Also, because the interaction and sale has actually happened online, and you were in the UK or in Canada or in another country or whichever country you're established in, the sale happens there. And then when you're in country, you're just delivering it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. For one that I'm doing in the UK, there's like a pre-order form and system. So yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, this is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell everyone about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
Well, we'll see how it goes because it's still a test. With the series I'm doing currently, everyone says keep it to one main character. I chose four, so it's fun. It's a party of people and they're doing different things. And it's been a really fun challenge to have because they're very four distinct characters, but they're also each of us are listening and pulled by all of them to do their things. So, yeah, that's been a bit of a rebellious phase. And also, I guess this is rebellious for Lit RPG, is I went wide with this series. So statistically, Lit RPG has nearly only been on Amazon. So now I'm trying out all of the different stores to see what happens, which is a little terrifying because KU is such a big, 50 to 80% of our income. And we'll see how it goes. But nothing risked, nothing learned. And it's going to be fun no matter what. If nothing more, I get to write books.
Yes, exactly. And you can always change your mind at the end of the day. That's the power of being an indie.
100%. Any direction you want to go.
Okay, well, tell everyone where they can find out more about you, your books, and anything else you'd like to add.
You can find me over on Ream at Michael Chatfield, and you can find me on my website, michaelchatfield.com. We're over there all the time. We've got a newsletter set up which comes out monthly that tells you all the chaos that's happening behind the scenes. And all of the sweet things we've got coming up next.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And of course, a giant thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/SashaBlack. I'm Sasha Black. You were listening to Michael Chatfield, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast.
Next week, I'm talking to Aurora Winter all about creativity, nonfiction, business, turning your books into a business. So join me next week for that.
Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.